never wavers. Explore our program schedule at kyrs.org. And when you're ready to make a difference, donate online or text Give KYRS to 44321. Every contribution is a promise, a vow that community radio will continue to inspire, connect, and uplift. Thank you for believing in us.
Welcome to Out and About. You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 and 92.3 FM. I'm having some fat fingers today. I've completely gone off the rails. I'm so glad I have professionals with me here today to bail me out when I need bailing out, because I think it's going to happen. Yes, that was a very confusing intro, and I apologize. That's on me for sure. But today we have director Preston Loomer and playwright Sandra Hoskins. And Sandra and Preston are from the Stage Left Theater production of Mad Underground. Hello, welcome.
Hello, hello.
Hi, great to be here.
It's this experiment of, you know, letting people like me have a radio show. We're going to talk a lot about the show, but I also want to talk about you guys today, too, because you both, to me, are fascinating people. Let's start off a little bit talking about the show, Mad Underground. Sandra, you wrote the show. Mm-hmm. And you, back in 2022, I believe it was, you also workshopped this at Spokane Playwrights Laboratory, right?
Okay. Yes, exactly.
And have you made many changes to it since then, or are you kind of going with the finished product?
I've made a few changes.
Yeah.
The play is older than that. I've had it for over 10 years.
Yeah.
And I've been working on it. And yes, I thankfully was able to workshop it with SPL. And since then, I would say I've changed the characters a bit, pulled out some dialogue that wasn't working,
mm-hmm.
and tried to make things even funnier.
Yeah.
So we'll see if that worked.
Good. Well, you know, I was going to say this play, and I'll let you talk a little bit about the plot line. But for me, I know it involves like underground tunnels and like an abandoned carnival. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty close. So the current, it's an amusement park in the 1960s.
Okay.
So it's still operating. But yes, I watched a documentary about Disneyland and Disney World and how there's tunnels. Yeah. There's tunnels underneath. And so I thought, what if this play could take place in that world? And what would the characters be like when they were not on duty?
Yeah. Well, and I'm always, to me, if it has something underground, I'm in. I mean, why is that, Preston? Why are people attracted to tunnels and caves and things lurking below?
I think there's a level of like solving a mystery that you can get, you know, you think about, you have to go out into nature and do it, but like some of us don't like to go out in nature. So it's like, oh, I could go to the urban, you know, theme park. And that's the question, like when you grow up as a kid going to places like Disneyland, where it's like, what's behind that door?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where does Mickey Mouse go when no one's looking?
Yeah. And per, you know, personnel only type of thing. I walked to Epcot Center once, which they told me I couldn't do, so I had to do it. And so I walked the 7 miles to Epcot Center from where our hotel was, and I found this gate that was on my phone. And so I went to the gate, and there was nothing but employees coming out dressed in period costumes from Epcot Center. And there was a guard at the parking lot. And I went up to ask him for directions, and he was dressed like an old time cop and had like all this anti-terrorism stuff. And he kept yelling at me to like halt and to stop and don't come any further. But I'm like, I have to ask you a question.
Yeah.
And he told me to turn around and walk back. But I'm like, nah, I don't think I'm going to do that. I'm almost there. So anyway, yeah. So, but I'm always fascinated about that too, about the characters and kind of the special perks and the weird stories that they have. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So why don't we tell a little bit about the story itself of Mad Underground?
So, and correct me if I'm wrong, because obviously I'm directing it, so I could have ruined everything that you wrote. but it's takes place in the 60s. It's a rough Alice in Wonderland kind of, like, alludes to that a lot, of the characters. It's this young boy at the amusement park, gets separated from his parents, and then follows a character who's a donkey, which is another animal with long ears, like a white rabbit, down into the underground, and then discovers all these other kind of characters and sort of this like mythos of what's this park that we see is built on top of a bunch of like discarded remnants of the past.
Oh, wow.
And in the process of doing that, we start to see kind of the characters, both the kid himself and all of the sort of costumed and like theme park characters, transforming into more accurate versions of themselves over the course of the play.
Very cool. Very cool. How does that sound, Sandra? Does that sound...
I think that's an amazing explanation, and I wish I thought of it. In fact, I just learned something. See, you learn things about your own play when a director takes over and actors take over. And I never thought about the donkey having the long ears like the rabbit. It never even occurred to me until you just said that.
I genuinely thought that was totally like, oh, donkeys and rabbits, obviously.
No, I thought of the donkey because he's an ass. And, you know, Pinocchio, when he goes to the island and everyone turns into a donkey, it's sort of like that kind of thing. That's kind of where that image came from in my head. But I love the long ears.
So is the donkey... And not to give too much away, but is the donkey like a real donkey, or is the donkey like a person who plays like a character in the park?
I'll say the direction that we've taken it in the show is he's kind of the Mickey Mouse of the park.
Okay.
We've been working on like one of those mascot costumes that the actor doesn't wear the whole time, but at least one scene, there's one scene where you'll see a full donkey just come out on the stage.
Okay, like Marty Moose at
one of those big like top headed, you know, and we have a whole gag of like you can't have the head off when the kid's around things.
Yeah. Oh, fun. How, Sandra, so what was the kind of the evolution of this play? What gave you the idea and how did you get started on it?
Well, aside from that documentary, I just thought about, you know, when you're a little kid and you're in this big place, how easy it is to get lost, and then how you feel when you are separated from your parents. And the character's name's Alec, and his stepdad is not very nice. So he has kind of a fractured relationship with his mom and his stepdad. Mm-hmm. And I think that he goes looking for this donkey which is a character that he loved or thought he loved, you know, and he just follows it down like Alice in Wonderland did. Yeah. And I don't know, what would you add to that,
Preston? Yeah, and I think it's this level of Alec. There's a lot of conversations in the play around Alec doesn't quite know who he is and is trying to figure himself out. And there's a, you know, there's some really poignant scenes in there with a couple of the different park characters where Alec's kind of like, what is this? And they're like, what do you mean? It's like, well, that's what I got called. And there's some, yeah. So not to give away too much of the ending, but there is some levels of like Alec's going to transform over the course of the show.
Okay. Okay. And, you know, and I, you know, speaking of discovering who you are, you both have wear so many different hats. I mean, not just, you know, not just as, not just in, you know, like Preston, you're an educator as well, but you're also a writer. I've had the pleasure of acting with you, which has been fun. And, you do a lot of different things. You do anything in the production of a theatrical production too. You do the lights, you do the sound, you do, and you direct everything. Yeah. And Sandra, you have, besides you do those things, but also you are, you do photography and you also poet. You're a poet as well. And nominated for you were nominated for a,
the Pushcarts?
Pushcart, yeah.
Yeah, one of my
I was going to say Pushkin, but that wouldn't be right. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, you bring a lot to this. When you, I this is kind of a dumb question, but do you have a favorite thing that you like to do? Do you like to, or does it kind of change from time to time as far as like acting, writing, directing? How about either one of you on that?
Sitting down. That's my. no, I think it changes. I mean, I'll say that a lot of that is you know, 25 plus years of undiagnosed ADHD. That just like I was one of those kids who was like every week was a different fun habit that I wanted to pick up on. You know, everything comes together, and I started the acting thing. My parents are all like, I literally like family business theater family. My parents met doing Godspell. Like that's the, actual, wow. You know, origin of me. but as I started to, I did a lot of acting in my 20s. And then as I started to kind of approach the sort of theater scene here, I started being like, I want to tell these stories more completely, like as a whole and not as a piece. And so that's what I did. You know, said, okay, let's see, how do I direct stuff? And then just started working on it. And then, you know, and I kind of take it show by show. Like, I do it, what do I feel about this? How do I make this, you know? The stuff I write is usually like, what's going on in here that I can, you know, get out.
So you basically, you have a lot of different tools in your toolbox, and then you whatever you want to make, you pull up, depending on those tools.
I always describe, my brain is a Wonka Vader. It's just, I don't know which way it's going today, and we just follow it.
That's interesting. So I've been alive a lot longer than you, Preston. So I've had time to explore different things, lots of different jobs, starting out as a teacher. But I've always been a writer. I mean, my first play, I was 12. It was called Death by the Dollar. And I typed it on a typewriter. Didn't really finish it because I didn't know how at that point. And then got serious about playwriting when I started getting involved in theater in the mid-90s, mostly backstage. I would say I'm not a very strong actor, but I can write. And when my actor friends started reading my words aloud, well, that was very exciting.
I bet.
So I really love to do that, but I also love poetry. So you asked, you know, which is your favorite? I would say it just depends on the mood of that I'm in, and also the idea that I have. The idea that I have, it tells me what it wants to be. So maybe it's a picture, maybe it's a poem, and maybe it is a play or a film script or weeding the garden. I don't know.
Do you ever find like maybe you've written a poem or... And then there's other works that come out of that poem or vice versa, like, say, you know, the play. Do you go back and kind of revisit some of the characters through poetry at all?
No. I don't think I've really done a cross genre thing.
Cross-pollination things, yeah.
They must influence each other somehow. I would say, like, the poetry is more influenced by nature. So if I went for a walk on Mount Spokane, like, last weekend, and just as I was there, all these words came to my head, and it was a poem, and that's what it's going to be forever. So, yeah, interesting question.
Well, when you were talking about your first play, when you were 12, typing it up, not knowing how to end it, that's always a thing, right? I mean, how do you know when your play is finished, right? I mean, is that tough for you, or you just go like, okay, that's done. I'm done with it.
You know, Brian Harnato, he's my mentor. He's a Spokane playwright. He always says, plays are never finished. They're just abandoned. And I would say that's true, because Mad Underground, I didn't look at it for a number of years, since 2022. And then they said they wanted to do it at Stage Left, so then I looked at it again. But Preston and team are the ones really breathing the life into it.
Yeah.
So,
I've had writers and directors in here before talking about their work, and it's always, to me, I always kind of wonder about, do you go to the rehearsals and look at what's going on, or do you just want to be surprised about what you see at the end?
For this one, I didn't feel that I needed to be at all the rehearsals. Mm-hmm. I've been hands off, and I would like to be surprised.
Yeah.
So, and that's fine. So he can speak to the production little things about it. But I'm going to appreciate it no matter what. I know some people might go see a play and think, well, that's not how I wrote it. You know, I would have done that differently. And yeah, that might be true. But,
or like, oh, they misinterpreted this.
Yes,
this
that
part.
Could totally happen. Yeah. But it doesn't matter, because I birthed the baby and now I gave the baby to them.
Yeah.
And they get to do, and I'll just be happy. And that's a mindset as a playwright you have to have, I think. Unless you're in a workshop situation like I was at SPL, where we really work together on, you know, the revisions and stuff.
Right.
I'm going to say the cast anxiety, if they're listening, guys, chill. It's fine. See, she said it was fine. Yeah. No, that's one of the reasons I love the craft of theater is, like, you know, even if it's, you know, playwright live or dead, like, we take the words as a director and go, this is what I think it is.
Right.
And then we give it to a cast who takes it, and then they show it to an audience who thinks completely everything wrong than from where we even started. So it's, and I love the sort of, it's a group story and everyone has their own version of it and they're all correct.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Everyone's going to take something out of this, whether it be that's going to change my life forever, or whether it be like, what was that? I never want to see that again. You know?
I did have someone ask me that, not about Mad Underground, but it was a different play, also had a clown in it. And the audience left and there was an older lady. I said, well, what did you think? And I didn't tell her who I was, that I was the writer. And she said, I don't understand it. You know, with this real grimace on her face. She really hated it. And if you can survive that as a writer, you can survive anything.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's the funny thing, you know, as a writer too. I mean, as a writer, as a poet, as a painter, whatever you do, most of these artistic and photographer, they're these solitary endeavors, you know? And then when you come to theater, man, it is playtime for everybody.
It is.
And you know, and it's just, it's just a big change of channels, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for real. It was very, a few years ago, did a show, and at the end of it, my mother-in-law came and saw, and she goes, I don't know why you looked scared at the end. And I was like, yeah, that was the point. Like, and she was like, oh, I thought you were supposed to be like excited. And I was like, no. Like but it's like one of those things of, like, you know, the expectations are there, and we had to have that conversation about it. But there is this level of, you know, collaboration that I think you can't get anywhere else.
Mm-mm.
And that's part of the process that we've put into the rehearsals for this is, there are times when the actors have come in and been like, what if I did this? And I'm like, that sounds really stupid. Just try it. And then I go, yeah, no, that's great. Do that. Please keep it. It's fantastic. You know, or we spent the first week of rehearsals just discussing the script and talking about like context of like how long have these characters been here? Where did they start? How did they come? We came up with a lot of like really deep stuff about like, oh, this donkey started as like a World War II, like, you know, maybe like propagandist that ended up getting in.
And we kind
of veered a little away from that, but like there's levels of stuff that the audience will never see, but we'll be like, hey, it helps this performance
inform this character
grounded and interesting.
Yeah, I love that kind of thing. You know, exploring the backstories of characters is so much fun. And I suppose when you direct these folks too, is that you wind up seeing something that in them that you go, you know, I really think just from who they are and how they look and how they move, that maybe we're going to change the way we interpret this character a little bit.
Yeah, we had a few. We went literally from the audition. We had a couple of roles that I went in to the audition with, like, this is what I see it in my head. Yeah. And then we got people in the room and who we ended up casting, and I went, okay, that's not what I thought, but that's going to work. And it's going to work for very different reasons. And it's actually going to work better because of the other people that we've gotten.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of more of their truth in there too. That's pretty cool. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to attempt to do our 20 minute after the hour stuff. We're going to see how this goes. So far, so good for the last 20 minutes. Okay, here we go. So I'm going to be back after I play a little bit of music and then I'll load up my PSAs and whatnot. So here we go. Enjoy. You know, who wouldn't like to have a little bit of Nancy Sinatra and Lee Greenwood? Let's do that right now.
Some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna open up your gate and maybe tell you about Phaedra and how she gave me life and how she made it in. Some velvet morning when I'm straight,
flowers growing on a hill, dragonflies and daffodils learn from us.
Some velvet morning when I'm straight.
gave me life.
Look at us, but do not touch.
How she made it in.
Okay, we are back. I have my PSAs and everything and my underwriter loaded up on the computer, but it's not playing. So I'll just say thanks to my underwriter, Eastern Washington University. And I guess you won't be able to know what's live and local. So that's just the way it goes. Lots of technical difficulties in the studio today. I am back right now with director Preston Loomer and playwright Sandra Hosking, and we are talking about the play Mad Underground, which, you know, I was kind of remiss. We should have told people how they can get tickets.
Oh, that's right.
Let's tell people how they can get tickets.
Tickets, we can go to stageleftheater.org. That's theater with an E-R. Or as we've learned recently, apparently there was another Stage Left that linked to us. It was my wife had a whole night of like,
oh no,
hearing people in Colorado being like, how do we see this? Where is this theater? it was a funny moment. But yes, stageleftheater.org. We got tickets right there on the main page. And I should say that we're partnered with Odyssey Youth Movement. So 20% of all our ticket sales are going directly to them to help support LGBTQ+ youth in Spokane.
Yeah, that's very cool. And that play is running the 11th through what, the 27th?
27th, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. 27th of September.
Yeah. So but people need to, if you haven't been to Stage Left, you maybe you might not even have heard of Stage Left Theater, but it is a national and internationally known theater.
That's true.
I mean, pretty wild. Little tiny theater, 50 seats maybe, if that. And
60, I think.
Yeah. So, was it kind of difficult with the space to stage this at all? Were there challenges?
We had some challenges just based on the nature of, I'll say Sandra's script has a grand scale to it that you can kind of see in the way that things are described. And Stage Left is, again, a 60 seat kind of black box space.
Yeah.
So we had to kind of get really creative, and we were really lucky that Stage Left got David Baker to come on as tech director right when we started this process. And Baker built a whole, we've got kind of this cool idea of doorways that lead to which way everywhere, and they can slide around the stage and move. So we have this sort of cool idea that there's 1,000 entrances and who knows who's coming from where, when.
That's the big fun, I think, of Stage Left is that, you know, the way that people come up really imaginatively to use the space. I mean, there've been some big productions in there with such a little space.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we inadvertently did this cool thing where I just based on how I staged it, the stage keeps getting deeper. So as the play goes on, you get further into the underground.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't realize I was doing that until like a week ago. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I guess that helps.
I love that kind
of
thing.
I love it when the subconscious takes over.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, writers experience that a lot, but that's cool that as you directed it.
When you were writing, Sandra, do you feel like you start out with a plot, or do you kind of let your characters do their thing and then just kind of take notes of what they're doing, or how do you do it?
I've had it both ways. A lot of times it's characters, I hear their dialogue. They're speaking to each other. Other times it's a place, like, you know, in Mad Underground, this place was really prevalent in my mind. And then sometimes it is, the story is driving towards an end, and I had the end in mind in the very beginning, and I'm just writing to that end.
Your characters ever thwart your end?
Of course, things don't work. And writing the middle of anything, whether it's a novel or a play or an essay is the hardest part. Mm-hmm. And so you often know the beginning and you rework that a million times and you often know the end. But then how do you complicate the story in the middle to keep people interested and to raise the stakes? Yeah. That's the biggest challenge. And But Mad Underground wasn't so hard for me because it's a journey and many of my stories are journeys. Yeah. This is not the first one where a character went on a journey to somewhere, whether it's exploring a place or themselves.
Yeah.
So I just go where the journey takes me. But I have had to change the ending of this play because in the first iteration, it made absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
And one of the characters in the earlier version was a painting.
Oh.
I don't know how art would be a character, and it didn't really work.
Well, but that's an interesting concept, though.
Yeah, that is interesting.
It was a Gauguin.
Huh.
And people were like, go see the Gauguin, and I've totally written it out of the play now.
There's one reference to Gauguin still.
One
on the
reference.
Show.
I think I'd like to see the play. I'd like to know what that was like to have a painting as a character.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, it was weird.
And you did, you had, I think when I was on the board, you did a lot of the Fast and Furious plays, didn't you?
Yeah, so when did the theater start? Was it 2013?
Yeah.
And Bob had bought this building downtown on 3rd, this little space, and he wanted to make it a theater. And they invited me to be the first playwright in residence. And so, and I was already doing an annual stage reading of 10-minute comedies, and it was at Auntie's, and it was at the Blue Door, and it moved around, and it kept growing in size till we outgrew all the spaces we were in. And so when Stage Left invited me, great. And I was, and then I added, so that was Hit and Run, that was 10-minute comedies, and then I added Fast and Furious, which they're still doing this year. Scripts were due yesterday. That's 1-minute plays. Well, 1 to 3 minutes, really, if you're counting. And then I also started the 24-hour festival called Leftovers. I don't know if they're doing
they
that
are,
anymore.
They are planning to do it.
They are planning to do it.
Okay.
So that's where the writers write the play overnight, and then the actors and directors take that script and produce it in one day. Mm-hmm. And we were always selling out performances of all these festivals. And I really hope I sort of semi-retired from them and passed the torch.
Yeah.
But I really hope that, you know, people come out for those again because they were just so fun to do from an acting and directing standpoint.
Yeah. I love those kind of things because people are, you know, there's part of like, you know, things are going to go wrong. And that's kind of the fun, you know, kind of like a drunk Shakespeare type thing.
My first show at Stage Left was Leftovers that Sandra wrote.
Okay.
And
I don't remember the play at all. Which one was it?
You did Fake Shake, and we all had to like learn knock off Shakespeare in 24 hours.
I don't remember this play.
I have the script. I could bring it tomorrow. Yeah, it was called.
Sounds like maybe a revival of
that.
Yeah,
like the whole cast was like, we're really into Shakespeare, and Sandra was like, okay, and then brought this thing. And we were like, we made a mistake. but it was like, yeah, it was the coolest brush ever. To when you finish it, and you're like, I did that in one day. Like, yeah.
Is that the villain's one?
Yeah.
Oh no, I do remember it. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. So, you guys, how long have you been rehearsing this?
We started rehearsals, just like right at the end of July.
Uh-huh.
And then, we've just been going through August and we open next week. So we're kind of in the buckle down, get everything tightened up moments. But like, I think, you know, we were talking before we started about like, they're at a place where it is there.
Yes.
They just need to like really lock all of it in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's a good place to be. Yeah. Sandra, do you ever think about making a musical out of something like this?
So there are a couple songs in the play that I heard in my head, but I'm not a musical person.
Yeah.
I am tone deaf. I did a musical in high school once, but I was like a background character, right? So Preston has done some interesting things. So David Bullis actually helped during the SPL workshop kind of help shape the two songs, like the, I don't know, like create a melody or
yeah,
help guide it, I guess. And then you guys have taken it a step further.
Yeah, so we had a couple of things. We have two songs. One that's only ever sung really a cappella, and we're kind of finalizing the tune for it because you only hear about like four words of it. But then there's this one song right before intermission it's a full like four verse thing. And our assistant director, Tate Rep, went and knew some people in a band and said, what if you guys recorded this? And so we gave it like a country western spin. And then just this last weekend, we got the actors to go out and sing on top of this band's recording. And if you come see the show, it will play at some point.
Oh, fun.
That's Do you want to say the name of the song?
Song, as far as I know, is Whips and Chains.
That's the title.
What's it called?
Whips and Chains.
Okay. All right. All right.
Yep. So this is not a kid's show.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a kid's show. Okay. No. So really with a song like that, I think I saw that on Nickelodeon, but no. Yeah,
different version of this.
Well, let's let people know again, because I feel like I didn't do a good job of doing this the first time, how they can get tickets to see Mad Underground.
Yeah. So if you want tickets to see Mad Underground, which runs September 11th through the 27th, you can go to stageleftheater.org and get tickets right there on the website.
Have you two worked before other than being in together, other than you being in the Fast and Furious as an actor?
I don't think so. I think we've crisscrossed.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing, I didn't even see the SPL. I was at a thing and I couldn't go to the, so the first version I ever got of this was seeing the raw script with no context.
I don't think I saw it at SPL either. I don't remember.
It was during COVID and there were a lot of my theater friends that couldn't make it because it was, you know, during COVID and stuff, but there were a lot of people there that I didn't know, like new people to the theater or this next generation coming up. And that's what I'm getting from this play. Yeah. Is I've had younger theater artists come to me and say how much this play meant to them, because it's not just a comedy. There is a heart to it. This kid who gets lost in the underground, they're trying to figure out who they are and they are questioning their gender.
Yeah.
And you know, I wanted this. This was like the framework for the story.
Yeah.
But it didn't. I know that is a national discussion right now. Yeah. You know. But it wasn't when I started writing it. It came from when I was a teacher, and I worked with younger kids, and how I'd have a kid one semester, and they'd come back the next semester, and they'd have a different name or a different way of dressing or start wearing makeup or like they want to change their identity, and they're exploring all this, and so. And then even me personally, when I was 11, I had a terrible like bowl haircut and people thought I was a boy. And some people would say young man, you know, and it was really interesting or, you know, to think, oh, they don't know who I am. And do these adults bother to find out my name or who I am and what I'm about? No, they don't. I think a lot of times adults just think that's a kid. And they keep walking. You know, they don't sit down with them to have a conversation.
To find out who they really are.
To find out who they are, what they think, what they believe, what they're into. And teachers, like Preston knows, we actually, that's our job, is to get to know the kids.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of just people in the world don't take the time. And so I wanted to kind of put that in this play.
Well, you know, it's funny because you mentioned about how the transgender stuff being kind of a national dialogue now. And you know, I think it was a national dialogue where it was sort of like, well, it's acceptance, acceptance, acceptance. And then all of a sudden there's like this big backlash, it seems like. And, you know, I found myself recently when I write stuff, when I'm writing fiction or poetry, that I might make a passing reference to the character in that in a short story. But I don't really dive deep into, I just sort of like make like a, just a little, maybe a couple sentences that would make the reader go, ugh. But I don't know if that's from me thinking that, well, I don't want to, you know, be overtly, which I don't think that's it. Or is it just like more accepted, or I just want it to be just a nothing thing. Like he's wearing a red shirt, you know, or something like that.
This is just a part of life.
Yeah. And so it's interesting to see how creatives will deal with this as we move deeper into this. And for me, it's a matter of fact thing, you know? So, although some earlier stuff that I wrote wasn't, but, So I'm anxious to see how that transpires.
So it's a little more key to the plot in this one, but
but that's
for me as a, you know, that's part of my experience as a teacher is always going, I'd even literally told my students that today, like they're humans before they're anything, you know, there's some teachers that go, these are students. I'm like, no, these are human beings. Like they have things that they, and some of them, you know, whether they know it or not, have some aspect of themselves that they're trying to figure out that maybe isn't right in front of them. And so like for me, that's always my thing as a teacher is I'm not here to tell you what you are. I'm here to help you find it, you know, and that can look 100 different ways. And so it was one of the things I gravitated towards when I first read the script is I was like, man, there's a lot of existential like identity stuff. And like you said, because of the sort of national conversation around, there's a level of how do we show people that they have a space, you know, and that they are allowed to be themselves in spaces. And that's one of the things the show really speaks to is kind of, you find that the characters that Alec interacts with, the ones that seem to be the ones that end up kind of on their side are the ones that start to go, okay, I see you.
Yeah.
Like I see you as you are, not as the world sees you.
Right.
You know? And in the process, they also sort of find themselves through that.
Well, I just think that an amusement park underneath an amusement park in a tunnel is just metaphor rich, you know, it's thing to mine for this. I just think that was, did the setting change much when you were writing this or how it was always that?
Mm-hmm. It was always that.
There's something about those spaces too that are, and I, you know, especially like abandoned places where people were happy, that there's almost like this ghost to me that lives on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a abandoned amusement park in Cleveland that's all overgrown now. And like, you wouldn't know it, but I was like, what is this thing in the middle of the town that has these overgrown trees and fences and remnants of rides and stuff? Yeah. And so I had to look it up. And yeah, it's like, it's kind of sad to look at it.
Yeah.
Knowing that people were once happy there, like you said, well, where did it go?
Yeah.
Where did all that joy go?
Yeah, it's got to be around there someplace or under in the tunnels.
It's underground.
Well, I think about going, you know, we used to have to go to calls at Sans Souci, which is at the end of Boone, and that was Natatorium Park, you know, back in the day, back, what, I think that closed in 67, I think. But there's still a few buildings left from then, but you look at, like, pictures of just a packed streetcars running like every 15 minutes to this park. It was like the only thing to do in Spokane. And it's like, man, that's, there's a lot of something still stirring in those grounds, I feel like, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
But, So what's, not to move ahead too far, but what's next on project-wise for you guys after this? Do you have anything going on?
Surviving the school year.
You were saying, you had picked an awful week.
I picked the best week to still into tech week, which is, hey, I have to have all of my ducks in a row for work and then go straight to, I manage, you know, 15 rabid children and then go manage 15 rabid adults. And it's great. I don't have anything like lined up other than I'm also the middle school drama club coordinator at the district I work at. So I'm going to do that. That comes around like March-ish. But other than that, I'm going to take a minute to like breathe. And then I'm probably, you know, 2 weeks after the show opens, I'll be like, all right, what's next?
Yeah, I have no doubt. I'll see you in something right afterwards. How about you, Sandra?
I don't know. Right now I'm in grad school, so I have all this homework. So I'll focus on that. I'm almost done early next year. Maybe I'll go back to my middle grade novel. I just joined a picture group critique group for children's picture books. So I need to, you know, finish writing a manuscript for that group.
Okay.
I've been really thinking about children's stories and trying to do something with those. I bounce around from genre to genre. I can't help it.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. Do you, do you, you have a degree from, I'm trying to think, you're Whitworth, right?
I'm Whitworth all the way. Yeah.
Preston,
I did teach a playwriting class at Whitworth a couple times. I have 2 degrees from Eastern. One was English education. So okay. I did that. And then I got an MFA in creative writing there in 2004. But then I really loved playwriting. So I went to the University of Idaho and I got an MFA in theater and dramatic writing in 2013. And I really loved that program.
Yeah.
I recommend it because it's distance delivered, meaning you do not have to go to Moscow, Idaho to study there. Whether you're a writer or a director, and they will work with you. So you can stay in your town and do like, you know, Zoom calls or whatever for your classes. And then for playwriting, each semester you get to write a play. So I had several plays come out of that. And I would say I started Mad Underground, like I started really working on it like after I graduated, but it's also one of the cheapest MFA programs you're ever going to find.
Okay.
So here's a little plug for the University of Idaho theater program.
That's not the one you're working on now, is it? You're working on something completely different than...
Yeah.
So, yes. Yeah. Is it going to be arts-related as well?
No. I'm working on an MBA from Grand Canyon University because I work for the parent company. So okay. I get a free education.
Oh, nice. That's cool.
Yeah, I thought I would take advantage. I've always been interested in business, but, okay, this is a warning to all you artists out there. There's a lot of math involved.
Mm-hmm.
If you do not like math, and it's going to feel like you're being tortured. So don't do an MBA. If I had a choice, I would. You know, to do it again, I probably would pick something different. But yeah. I know, I keep saying, it's going to be good for me as an artist. Because I think artists love to be artists, writers, but they lack some business sense sometimes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they always want to be on boards and start organizations without the know-how. And so this is just, you know, I just want to have that background, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you as an artist, I mean, you have to wear so many different hats. Mm-hmm. I mean... And that's just going to be a bolstering that hat. I just went to a writer's workshop. Lots of Eastern MFA people there. My friends who have Quillisasket Farms up north.
Uh-huh.
And Sam Ligon and Kate Lebo. That's the second year I've done it. But it was fun because it was more... poetry. We got to do a little more poetry stuff, I felt like. And I got to meet some poets who are doing cool stuff. And I love hanging out and talking with poets.
I love poets, too. In fact,
I mean...
Yes. Full disclosure, when I got my MFA in fiction at Eastern, I really liked the poets better. And so I love those classes. And so I'm really happy to have found it again. So good for you for going to those workshops.
Oh, yeah. Well, I like it. And the food out there at Quillisasket Farm School is phenomenal.
Awesome.
So, yeah. So it's 5 days of eating a lot, way too much food, and drinking too much wine, and writing just the right amount.
Oh, that's...
yeah.
That's a wonderful time right
it's
there.
It's my hermit.
That's paradise.
Yeah. It is. It truly is.
For a writer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to let people know again how they can see Mad Underground.
Yes, if you want to see Mad Underground, it is at Stage Left Theater. You can get your tickets at stagelefttheater.org, and it runs September 11th through the 27th.
Come, please come.
Yeah, it's I have not been due to some health issues. I haven't been to the theater. Stage Left in quite a while, I don't think.
It's a good one to come back. And again, I also want to plug that 20% of all the tickets are going straight to the Odyssey Youth Movement to support youth in the area.
Yeah. What's your daily creative practice like?
Hmm.
Do you follow a schedule or is there something that how you do it?
I don't follow a schedule. But for my day job, I'm also a writer, so I'm always writing something, even if it's for somebody else. I feel that is tapping into the creative mind.
Yeah.
and that counts. So yeah, but I don't have a schedule.
I have a bit of a reputation at work as being like the off the wall kind of quirky guy. I always joke.
Really? I'm surprised by that.
Yeah, right. Crazy. I always joke that I'm like, my lectures are less like an academic course and more like a Bo Burnham show. Like I just, you know, throw it out the wall. So I kind of incorporate it into my teaching and trying to find ways to like navigate that outlet. But then when it's not related to teaching, it's like, it's just kind of what's in the air that day. And, you know, I don't have a set routine, but there's times when something will catch, you know, and I'll be like, oh, that's interesting. And then, you know, make it, build it, design it, do it.
It's just kind of like what's in the air and grab it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a job at a big ad agency in town where they hired me as the crazy writer coming up with the crazy ideas.
Nice.
And then, so they had like some big clients that they were getting ready to, you know, to unleash some crazy ideas upon, and those clients fell through. But now I got hired for this, and I'm like, I've got to find a way to make myself useful in this place. I won't be here for long. So I'm like, do you have anything mundane to write? Just, and so, like, well, we got a lot of direct mail pieces. I mean, would you want to write any of those? I'm like, I would love to write some direct mail pieces.
Sure.
And so it's just finding the fun and being creative in the most mundane circumstances. I really enjoy that. And the fire department, I loved narratives, typing up my narratives for, you know, the medical calls or the fires, and trying to maybe make them little haikus thrown in there and stuff in them, because I knew nobody would read them unless it went to court. And I thought it'd be really funny to have like a 4-page long poem that completely rhymes. Yeah. Wouldn't that be cool? But I never had to go to court with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, but it's like, it's, I'm always, when I have artists, I always want to ask about their daily practice, because I'm curious. Are you a night writer or early morning writer?
Probably now. Used to be night. Used to be a night owl. Now I would say weekends, like Saturday or Sunday morning, get up, don't get out of bed, and just write something.
Do you write longhand or do you write on a laptop?
No, I use a computer, because back in the day, before everybody had a laptop, it hurts to write. It takes too long to get your thoughts out. I know some writers love to write longhand, but I can't get the thoughts out fast enough writing longhand. So that's why I type very fast. And if I'm really in the zone, if you looked at me, I would have my eyes closed and I would just be typing.
Just picturing what you're seeing and
hearing. Or just not looking at the screen, because if you look at the screen, you edit yourself.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and I think that's, I was surprised at this workshop, how many writers still like to do longhand writing, and I'm not. How about you, Preston? Are you?
Mine's a little different. I have found that when I go straight to like a digital source, I have all these ideas, and then I'm like, I don't know what any of this, then none of it comes out. So I always have to do some level of not necessarily longhand, but like taking notes in a physical notebook first. And then because of the whole, you know, actor thing, I'm like, I write dialogue by literally just talking to myself.
Mm-hmm.
I do some voices to it sometimes. So I'll literally just like have conversations with myself where the characters are fleshing it out, and then, you know, go from there and edit. But I'm definitely a morning person. My wife and I have developed this kind of nice routine that she's a real night owl and I'm a real morning person. So we both get about 2 hours on either side of the day to like kind of be in our own zones. But yeah. And then part of it is finding, ways to, I use a lot of my job, a lot of the educational stuff of like, I'm going to, you know, I always tell the students that I work with, I'm like, I'm going to do it with you so that, you know, you can see how to do it, but really I'm just going, I just need an excuse to write.
Yeah, yes. Right.
So I'll just do it as a project and then they have to get a grade for it.
Yes. So you just reminded me, when I was teaching English, I wrote a play version of The Scarlet Letter and I made the students read it and they hated it. They're like, we just want to read the actual novel, which I thought was hilarious, because you try as English teachers so hard to get them to read anything.
You trick them.
I guess I did, but I didn't mean to. So yeah. I don't know where that play is right now. It's I probably threw it away.
Yeah, my last year's middle school production was an original take on the Wizard of Oz. We went back to the novel and fleshed it out for middle schoolers, and they had a hoot.
Oh, that sounds so cool. Well, that's it for the show, and I'm not going to play any outro music or anything because I don't want to burn the station down. I have been talking to the director and the writer of Mad Underground, which will be is at Stage Left Theater starting September 11th and running through the 27th. And you can go to stageleftheater.com, and that's theater with an ER.
.org.
.org, stageleftheater.org. And that's an ER theater. And you can look up, get tickets there. And if you look at my show notes, I'll have that information on there as well. So thanks for listening to Out and About. I do apologize for cables being plugged into the wrong places here and all that. And I will, I'm going to fix that before the next person comes in. All right. Thanks a lot for listening. And you are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane.
Memo from corporate headquarters to staff. Notice, the beatings will continue until employee morale improves. That corporate joke would also fit the perverse ethic of the Republican Party's latest assault on homeless Americans. Believe it or not, the party's new homeless policy, officially embraced by the Trump regime and already enacted by 16 right-wing state governments, is to blame homelessness on, guess who? The homeless. Yes, hundreds of thousands of individuals and families living on the streets in our land of plenty are being ordered to go inside, even though they have no inside. But pious GOP politicos are not merely chiding the poor. They are using big government's authoritarian might to criminalize, arrest, incarcerate, and forcibly medicate some of the hardest hit people in our country. It's a raw, disgraceful example of the aristocratic arrogance of today's billionaire brat class, such as a Silicon Valley Trumpster, Joe Lonsdale. He's been on a sadistic crusade to ban homeless indigents from making alleys, underpasses, and other vacant spots into their, quote, home. A multi-billionaire profiteer of the Palantir espionage conglomerate, Lonsdale lives in splendor in his mansions, but he doesn't want to be bothered by the poor who might be perturbed by the inequality he perpetuates. Indeed, John recently demanded that angry poor people who might pose a threat to upright, uptight royals like him should be subjected to, in his words, public hangings. This is Jim Hightower saying, in a democratic society, government's role is not to protect the privileged from the people, but to protect the people from the oppression and ever-grasping greed of royal wannabes like Lonsdale. To keep track of the Republican assault on the poor, go to the National Homelessness Law Center, homelesslaw.org. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com. This is Jim Hightower, and you're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM.
KYRS Medical Lake and K222BG Dartford, 88.1 FM, 92.3 FM, Thin Air Community Radio.
The following program was pre-recorded.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We have a great relationship with Venezuela, it's a team in a sense.